Hey, 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 it's Ellen Rohr, the plumber's wife turned business makeover expert, and welcome to Business Makeover 2014. This is our opportunity to stop and think about what we really, 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 really want and springboard into aligned action. 21 experts, 21 days, that's all it takes to create new ways of thinking, to get unstuck, to create new habits, to have more success, and I've got lots more in store. So check your email every day. There's all sorts of cool things coming your way. I love these interviews. It's so much fun to dream big and release that which isn't working and embrace new, more productive thoughts and actions. This next speaker is perhaps the most appropriate speaker I could have picked for Business Makeover 2014 because Barry Maltz is an expert at getting unstuck. The title of his interview today is Getting Your Business Unstuck. Now, I met Barry at a panel. He's a mutual friend with Melinda Emerson, and I love her and then loved him instantly. By the way, Barry, Melinda thinks you are, she puts a crown on you every time we talk about you. She loves you so much. And I fell in love with you when we were on a panel together. Barry is fun, energetic. He holds no punches, and he is super, super successful. I want him to tell his story, but he's founded and run small businesses with all sorts of success and with lots of failure for more than 20 years. After successfully selling his last operating business, Barry has branched out into a number of entrepreneurship-related activities. He's an angel investor, and he's a former advisory member of the board of the Angel Capital Education Foundation. His first book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business, describes the ups and downs and emotional trials of running a business. And it's been translated, this book, into Chinese, Russian, Korean, Thai. He also wrote Bounce, Failure, Resiliency, and the Confidence to Achieve Your Next Success. He's nationally recognized as an expert on small business and has given hundreds of presentations to audiences ranging in size from 20 to 20,000. He's a member of the Entrepreneurship Hall of Fame, and he's a great radio guest and television star. He's been on CNBC's The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch. Love him. MSNBC's Your Business, NPR's The Tavis Smiley Show, and he hosts his own radio show, Business Insanity. You know, you are a fun guy, Barry, and welcome to the program today.
Ellen, thanks for having me.
Well, I like that you will embrace the successes and the failures. So why don't you take us on a little journey? Emphasize the moments in your life where you had to reinvent yourself or you found yourself stuck, and talk to us about your story to get us warmed up today.
Well, I think one of the hardest parts, Ellen, is that when you're taught that every year you'll be more successful and every year you're going to make more money, and it doesn't quite work out that way for most of us. I left college in 1981, immediately got a job with IBM, had a great rising career with them for 10 years, left there to become director of sales for one of my customers, and they were going to give me a fancy office and a teak wood furniture desk and a green back high leather chair, and I had my own assistant. Her name was Denise. So I was excited about all of this, but then a year later, I was fired. And so here I was, I left my job after 10 years, and then I was fired a year later at my new job, and then I started to another company with two guys I met from a classified ad in the Chicago Tribune. Now, not a good idea, Ellen, to meet your business partners as part of a classified ad. And then they fired me a year later. So here I am.
Ouch.
I have all the success, and all of a sudden I'm out on my butt. I'm expecting my first child, and it is just panic.
Oh, that hurt.
Yeah.
I just felt the 1-2 to the gut blow of that. So what'd you do?
Well, no, then fortunately, then I started a business with a husband of a woman that I knew from college, and that was a very, very successfully run business, and we sold it in 1999 during the internet bubble, and we sold it. My wife said, all right, that's it. Let's pay back the bank the $1.3 million we owe them, and you don't start any more business
in the
next
10
years.
That's awful.
You can get me back. Don't start any more businesses, and you go out and you speak and you write and you don't do anything else for 10 years. And so that's what I've been doing since 1999, really now helping small businesses get unstuck, because everyone has success and failure. You know, Ellen, success is not a straight line. And
no.
The sooner that we accept that, the sooner we'll be able to let go of our failures, learn whatever we can, as I said in my second book, bounce, and see what the next action we can take to get us close to the next success.
Well, I'm going to guess that a big part of your rebound strategy is your sense of humor. Because when we first met, we're going to this panel together, and I don't know who you are, but I'm in the elevator with you, and you start to make me laugh. And then I put together, oh, we're going to the same conference, and then we have breakfast together. I finally get to the conference. I look in the mirror. I've got mascara all down my face. All I've done is laugh. What a great way to start my day. So have you always had a sense of humor, a sense of the absurd about the ups and downs?
You know, I really believe that in this world, if you don't have a sense of humor, if you don't have dreams, you get nightmares. And I really think that every small business owner, sometimes the absurd things that happen, Ellen, you just got to laugh at it to get through and be able to let go. You could never make this stuff up.
Right. Like, you know, at least you get, this is where I'm down to anymore. At least we'll have a story. This may blow up in
exactly.
our face, but at least we'll have a story. So when you
Absolutely.
Got the job where you got knocked off, and then you found the partners and that didn't work out, you know, one big hiccup can collapse someone, but to have two in a row like that, how did you, do you remember that moment where you said, I'm getting back in the game, I'm going to change this?
Well, I remember the moment where I had to tell my wife we had lost all of our wedding money. Yes, I remember that part very, very well, and that did not go over pretty well. But I think that when you have your first, you know, you have a child and you see the beginning of new life, you realize that you can be reborn again. And what I knew at that moment was that I had to do business with someone that I knew, I like, and I trusted. And I decided at that point it really wasn't important the kind of business I was in, Ellen. What was most important was the people that I did it with. And that was a first very, very important learning to be successful in small business, that it's not about the idea, it's about who you execute it with.
I love that. I love that. You know, and I've been in situations where I knew right from the get-go that the person I was in business with might not do me right. Now, I've been in situations where I've known that and I've done it anyway for the experience, but I don't know if I would do that again. What do you think?
I think it is a very dangerous scenario because, again, business is all about people. It's not really about whatever the idea is. And if you think up front, Ellen, during the honeymoon phase, that you see some danger signs, this may not work out, well, guess what? Later on, when everyone's not on their best behavior and the chips are really high, it's going to be a problem.
So what is when you decided to go back into – business after you sold the internet company. What was the business, by the way? What did you sell?
Well, I sold a business where we sold first very technical software products through a mail order catalog. This is before there really was the internet and there were search engines, and eventually sold those software products over the web.
Okay.
And one of the reasons we got bought was that we got bought by a traditional catalog company that was trying to get access to the web. And if you remember 1999, anything that on the web was worth something.
Uh-huh. And so then there you are going, phew, okay, I got out of here with my skin intact. I can pay back the bank. We've got some wherewithal. Your wife says, do me a favor. Let's just think about things before you jump back in there again. How did you reinvent yourself at that point? What did you put a business plan together? Did you keep a journal? What did you do to discover how you could play next or serve next?
Well, I definitely started to keep a journal because one of my concerns at that period of time, remember, it's, you know, 2000, everything's really high and frothy, and there's the internet explosion. Everyone thinks you get rich by starting a business. And I wanted people to understand that, again, it's not a straight line, that there's good parts about having your own business, and there are difficult parts about getting through. So I wrote my first book about all my experiences over the 10 years of having three businesses, and that was really chronicled in You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. And that's when I started talking about the good things and the bad things. And, Ellen, people were very relieved to hear the bad things because people mostly focus on success stories, and they don't focus on the past failures that it really took to get there.
because there it isn't a straight line. And as you read biographies and, you know, talk to successful people, they're almost happy to share, like, I made 17 mistakes for every one mistake that I made, or for everything that I did right, that there is this, you know, don't worry about the failures. That's where you're going to learn what you should do or not do, but not to, to give up on your dreams and your ideas. Were there other people in your life, were there mentors or books or other voices that helped you during the tough times?
Yeah, well, listen, you have to have mentors. That's probably the single most important thing that people need, is someone to go there for some outside advice. So I had several really great people. And then also I started really reading a lot of business books, and that really helped as well, just to put my mind in a separate place. One of the problems, Ellen, is when we fail, we really get stuck in that place. We start to wallow. We start to cheer the darkness, right? And we really need things around us to get us unstuck and move us to a different place so we can take an action and move on. One of the problems in our society, people think there's always something to learn from failure, so I can't leave this place, so I figure out why failure happened to us and, you know, and what it all means. Sometimes at the point of failure, it means nothing. Sometimes it just sucks, right? But sometimes you can learn later on. The most important thing is learn what you can and take another action to put yourself in a different place. It's bad to be in a place of failure because desperation smells, and no one wants to do business with someone that smells.
I love that. Somebody told me once, you can take out the garbage without digging through it. Like, if that's not serving
you. Exactly.
Do you love that? You know, and right. It seems like you've really been able to keep a sense of perspective by keeping your sense of humor. What were some of the books? Share with me a couple, because I'm a big student of reading. I love to read, and I love to get people's recommendations. What were a few books that hit you between the eyes?
I mean, one of the things that I really, really liked was a book called, Growing Your Business. And this was really done, and I'm trying to remember what the name of the – oh, Paul Hawkins, that's right.
Oh,
Paul
yeah,
Hawkins,
okay. Is the Smith
is
and Hawkins
wonderful
guy?
He wrote a book a long, long time ago, and this book is from 1988, right?
Okay.
And he talked about growing a business. It was part of a 17-part PBS series, and I love what Paul laid out in the book, which is really a vision of how you can create a company that really reflects your values. And I realized at that point what I was really put on earth to do was to make a difference in people's lives by either running or advising people on small businesses. That's the way that I was going to make my contribution.
Oh, I love that. And it does, it gives it something more. But you're a money guy. I mean, you like to make money. These things are not at odds with each other, are they?
Well, no, listen, I think a lot of people say, well, you know, success isn't about making money. Well, guess what? It is one of the factors, because if you don't have money, then you can't do these other things. What I always say, Ellen, is that success is being able to support your family at something you love doing. So money can be one of the goals. It's not just the only goal.
Mm-hmm. But it does, it's the air that the business is going to breathe. I mean, you're not going to be in business long. We need to address that without getting overly worked up about it, too. So what are the things, if you go to work with a client, and the client, you know, maybe someone who's listening today is listening in because they go, you know what, 2013 went by like that. Before you know it, it's going to be the end of this year. If I don't stop and change, you know, things are not going to get any different and any better for me. I'm going to listen to what these experts have to say. That's what I was envisioning as I put these interviews together. So if someone is on the phone and they're feeling stuck, they've been doing this for years, they're starting to give up on some of their dreams, what are some of the tactical things that you do with your clients to help them get unstuck?
Well, I think one of the first thing is too many people treat their business like it's a job. It's kind of interesting, Ellen, because they got into their own business because they didn't want a job.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden it feels like a job, right, because you have to work all the time, you have to have enough money to support your family. You just really feel so connected, and the business is all about you. And they never really make enough money really so they can be independent from the business. So the first thing you have to think about is, as Carl Roth always says, you're not really creating a job, you're really creating a business. And what that's really about is, how can you add value? How can this business operate separate from you? It all just can't be about you. If you go on vacation, the business still should operate and you still should make money, because if you don't, you're never going to sell this business to get the ultimate windfall.
When people say that, yeah, that's what I want. I want a business that runs without me. What rocks do they put in their road to keep that from happening? Because they may think
they tell me that,
but then they're still doing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, they never set up an organizational structure, Ellen, to really support it. Small businesses start out, obviously, the organization charges a single dot, right, when they start. And then as they add people, it's very much hub and spoke with the owner or the founder at the center and everyone talking through them. So nothing gets done unless it goes through the owner. And while that may make your ego feel good, it does not create a business. It only creates a job. You have to have a hierarchical kind of organization for anything to really work, and try to hire the best people, people that are good at things that you're not good at, and guess what? You have to pay them some money. I believe in this world, you pay for what you get.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that dovetails with my message, which is you have to charge more than it costs. So if you're going to get good people to come work with you, you have to get real about what you're going to need to charge so that you can pull this whole thing off, which leads us to, how do you get to yes? So I know you talk about all areas of business. Another place that people get stuck is in sales. So they get stuck in being the low-cost provider or blaming their customers for not allowing them to make their dreams come true. Let's talk about getting unstuck when it comes to your mindset around sales.
Well, it's kind of interesting because a lot of people think they'll always be able to sell their way out of every situation, right? That there's some white knight coming in and they're going to save you, and that's the next customer, right? Or that's the next product you're going to sell. But people have not changed around their thinking about what sales is really about. Ellen, what they do is they get stuck in something called the double helix trap, and it works like this. Sometimes their business is really busy, and sometimes it's slow. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's slow. When things are slow, they're all aggressive in doing their sales and marketing campaign. But guess what? Here it comes. They finally get some business from their sales and marketing campaign, and what do? They stop doing any sales and marketing, exactly the thing that brought in that new client. And then as soon as they have no less clients, then they start doing sales and marketing again. And so their business stays flat. They don't put together a sustainable sales and marketing campaign, which is really about these days about showing value to the customers, giving them something of value that is not directly related to selling your product or service, but helping them along the way so they'll remember you, they'll be able to find you when they're ready to buy.
You know, as you say that, you struck a chord with me for a minute. Like, people think they're going to get unstuck with the next sale. I've seen this over and over again with my clients, and this is what happened to my dad. My dad had built a very good business, but then really didn't change with the times. As his customers changed, he was a heavy equipment dealer, and as his customers changed and his competition changed, he did not. But he always held out hope that he was going to make one more big sale, but not change the way he did anything. And it was really heartbreaking towards the end of the career and the end of his business life. And so it leads me to ask this next question. For you, it's about systems, isn't it? Putting in processes that allow you to discipline yourself to do that marketing, to do the measurement, to do the things that need to be done so that you can get a consistently better result. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, there's no question. You have to think about, why is McDonald's one of the most successful franchises in the world? Some people think it's the Big Mac, which is pretty darn good, right, Ellen? Or those French fries. You know, we love them, right? But it's really about the process.
I like the fries. Because, I do like the fries.
The fries. Okay. Because they have the same process no matter where you go, whether you go to if you go to McDonald's in Boston or you go to one in L.A., it's the same process, and that's what made them successful. One of the biggest problems we have in small businesses that we have ad hoc processes. We don't have set process set up for each one of the areas of the business to make sure that things go well. And, in fact, you have to see those processes really as one of your sustainable competitive advantages, because things come and go all the time.
And I can hear that that's probably your career in the corporate world and your career working with bigger businesses, that you can see that that's what's missing in a lot of small businesses, is they act small.
there's no question. What they do is they let today's emergency dictate today's plan, right?
Yep,
and so
yep.
they don't have a plan when they start every day or every week or every month. It's like, all right, let's just see really what comes up. And they're not really heading to any goal. I think Yogi Berra said that if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Well, yeah, but it's not going to be very successful for you.
Well, and I think another, you know, keeping the vision in mind, the big picture, putting a plan in mind, as an angel investor, you must hear some pitches. You might be visiting with people and you say, okay, so what's your great idea? Tell me some things that you've learned from being an investor in terms of hearing what someone else's business idea is and the mistakes and great things that you've experienced in that role as a venture capitalist.
Well, first of all, I'm no longer an angel investor because now I'm angel investing in my son's college education. So that's put on hold for the
your
next
son, your sons are adorable. I saw them on your Facebook
right,
page. The next eight years.
But I love when people, when I was an angel investor for most of the most of the last decade, people would come up to me and say, Barry, guess what? I only need $1 million to make this company successful. And I'm like, yeah, I only need $1 million too. And so what people really need to realize that people say, hey, it's about my idea. I don't want someone to steal my idea. And I kept on saying to them, Ellen, they've already stolen an idea, and they've stolen the next one. Again, it's really about execution. Any investments that are made in startup businesses or even maturing and growing businesses are made because of the people, because of the management team involved, not really because of what the company does.
That's true, because people will say, I really don't want to share this idea, or I couldn't get through the initial non-disclosure. But by this time already, someone else will have that idea, and they're going to take it to market. Seems like even on that show Shark Tank, what do you think of the show Shark Tank?
Well, I love Shark Tank. I mean, I happen to know three of the people on it. They've been very good to me, Barbara Cochran and Mark Cuban, and I just did an event with Damon Johns. I think it brings a great awareness, and it gets people very excited, and it shows just how tough it is to get investors. You know, I think one of the worst things that happens, and in fact, I was just writing about this in my new book, one of the worst things out there is when we get news reports that Snapchat was offered $3 billion from Facebook and the guy started the company 2 years ago. I think that hurts small business owners everywhere because guess what, Ellen, it's not going to happen to you, right? That's one in a billion chance, and I think that people really have to focus on step-by-step processes, interim steps to get to where they really want to go.
Well, and one of the things I like about Shark Tank, I know it's edited for entertainment, and God bless them, but they do ask really great venture capitalist questions like, have you made any sales? Are you capable of asking for the sale? How much have you sold? Even if it's a modest amount, if it shows that you can do that, and they do look for the people. You'll see them take a pretty baloney idea, but they like the person. And they'll say, I think we could help package this or do something else. But they look for willingness to sell. And if the product is desirable, if it's going to fill any need in the marketplace, and mostly, do I want this person to put some money behind? So that I think that underlines what you were just saying about the people are more important than the idea.
There's no question about that.
So let's talk about, you know, if you want to hire people, I think this is a big issue. A lot of folks I know, you know, I work in the plumbing, heating, cooling, electrical, chimney sweeps. We knock on people's doors. We do dirty jobs. These are my people. And in these businesses, I'm going to stereotype for a little bit, but in these businesses, they're often family businesses. You know, we might hire our wife or put her to work as a slave, or, you know, the son comes into the family or something like that. But hiring people is scary. What if I can't keep this person busy? Let's talk about hiring a person, paying them well, and increasing their productivity, because then they'll hire someone and then they won't release anything to them. So I've asked you a bunch of questions in that paragraph. Tackle it as you see fit, but let's talk about hiring.
Listen, it certainly is one of the most difficult parts of any small business owner's job because guess what? You really can't create a business for yourself instead of a job without leveraging other people working for you. If not, you're just doing everything yourself, and there's only so many hours in the day, and there's only so much you can charge. So hiring those first handful of employees is very difficult, And one of the problems that many of us face is that when they go and they interview people, they're desperate. They got to hire anybody. And the interviewer, you as a small business owner, you talk way too much. And you know something, Ellen? You got to shut up and you got to listen to what people are saying. And there's two things. One is you need to hire for attitude first. Will they fit into the culture of your company besides the skills? It's easy to find the skills, but will they fit with you? And then test them in those attitudes or skills. My favorite question to ask people when I'm hiring them is, tell me about a time when. So if I'm hiring a salesperson, I'll say, tell me about a time when you were able to land a new account and get specifics. Or if I'm hiring a customer service person, I say, tell me about a time when you were able to turn around a customer and they bought from you again. Many people can speak in generalities, but folks have a hard time giving you specific examples if they really experience those things.
So now you've hired somebody and you're nervous, fingers crossed, there's a new kid on the team. How would you get them on board? What are some of the things you do to get them productive?
Well, I think the big thing is you got to make sure that there is some kind of onboarding process. You know, many small business owners say, okay, here's your desk, go for it, right? And that's it, and they got to really figure it out. You've got to make sure that you have a job description, what
mm-hmm.
you'd like them to do, what the expectations are, what the success look like, and make sure that you're monitoring that person initially every single week. I thought it was very, very interesting. Not too long ago, there were these great news reports that said that a lot of large corporations are doing away with annual appraisals of their employees because guess what? That doesn't work anymore. Things move too fast.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be checking in with new employees every single week and every employee at least on a monthly basis to see how it's going.
I totally agree with that. And that annual review so often turns into a poop sandwich and a plea for a raise. It really becomes a non-effective, you know, a poop sandwich is the boss saying, I love you, but here's why I hate you, and here's why I love you, and it just gets
right,
confusing,
exactly.
Right? Because we haven't talked to them all year, and now we've got to say something, so we load it all in. And then the employee is always angling for a raise because there isn't a clear career path laid out, no transparent salary ladders aligned with the organizational chart. I know these things sound kind of formal and corporate, but what's the harm in imposing a little more of that into small business? From what I can see, that's how you grow, right?
Well, I think, again, there should be some structure, right? But just thinking that you're going to evaluate people on an annual basis and they're
yeah.
going to be happy or that's going to mean anything, that's really a big disillusionment.
So what do you've got a compelling bullet here that I wrote down. How to increase your personal productivity and your staff's by 100%. Because I love this idea. We're going to get unstuck. We're going to grow. We're going to make something happen. How do we